This is a Reconstructionist Radio production. Please visit ReconstructionistRadio.com to download our free audiobooks. The title of this book is Don't Talk to the Police, The Ultimate American Weapon, A Common Lawyer Comments, copyright 2010, written by Brent Allen Winters. Visit CommonLawyer.com for more information. Chapter 2. Why You Ought Not Talk to the Police. Any lawyer worth his salt will tell the suspect in no uncertain terms to make no statement to the police under any circumstances. Supreme Court Justice Jackson, Watts v. Indiana, 388, U.S. 4959, 1949. One of the Fifth Amendment's basic functions is to protect innocent men who otherwise might be ensnared. Truthful responses of an innocent witness, as well as those of a wrongdoer, may provide the government with incriminating evidence from the speaker's own mouth. Should you ever talk to the police? The question is simple. The answer is easy. No. If you are married to a policeman, maybe. But even then, one must be wary. To be sure, no is the right answer. But because you are in America, it helps to say no in constitutional terms. Upon the Fifth Amendment, I refuse to speak. These words and no other. These words and no more. Your commenter has further instructed his clients to write these words along with his telephone number on a piece of paper and to hand it to the questioning policeman or other government employee. The right to keep silent under the guarantee of the Fifth Amendment most readily honors clear and staunch, unwavering assertion of your right. In your commenter's experience, and that of others, he has yet to find a trustworthy exception to this simple rule, do not talk. The childish refrain, if you have nothing to hide, you will never be afraid to speak, is bad advice for two reasons. First, sometimes God desires silence nonetheless. Second, prosecutors are skilled at twisting innocent and even exonerating words against the one having spoken them. Seasoned policemen, as also other government employees, learn the wisdom of silence. Try asking one of them a question. The policeman will not talk much because he knows his words can expose him to public accusation and even lawsuit. Regardless of the innocent content of a person's speech, he is wise to expect that if a government agent or other employee sees advantage, he will torture all that he says against the speaker. Keep in mind, policemen and other armed government agents do not carry guns because they are out looking for people doing right. On the contrary, they carry guns because they are trying to catch the unwary in wrongdoing. Indeed, their whole culture is conditioned to it, so much so that they become acutely aware and alert to their suspicions of others. The Fifth Amendment confirms the framers' conviction that spoken truth can draw the ire of the powers that be, just as often as does speaking a lie, and sometimes more so. Once the criminal law industry enforcement machine has declared a person its target and focused its resolve and crosshairs on him, truth goes on the back burner. Further, each one that is a cog in that machine remains loyal to its smooth operation because his paycheck depends on it. Prosecutors find delight in twisting one's assertion of innocence to appear to the jury as a felonious lie. To be sure, all are duty-bound to testify in court when called upon to do so by lawful process. Further, to be witness to facts tending to help the falsely accused and not come forward with such testimony is vile. See, for example, Leviticus 5:1 and following. But never forget, the duty to testify under oath, like talking to the police, can be dangerous. Accusations of perjury and answers allowing prosecutors to infer other crimes are always possible. Thus, when wavering between speaking up and quieting down, stay silent. Supreme Court Justice Robert Jackson, a former prosecutor, put it clear. Quote, any lawyer worth his salt will tell the suspect in no uncertain terms to make no statement to the police under any circumstances. Watts v. Indiana, 388, U.S. 49 and 59, 1949. Justice Jackson follows the wisdom of our common law held by our Constitution's framers. The framers' wisdom behind the compact draft we call the Fifth Amendment came from deep convictions learnt in the crucible of hard lessons. Indeed, without immunity, one ought never talk to a policeman or government agent about any criminal matter, or even any civil matter, because at the whim of a prosecutor or the discovery of an obscure part of legislation, a non-criminal matter can be made a criminal case. Such are the devices of the modern police state. Your commenter has watched judges call, on the court's own motion, the prosecutors and judges' secretaries to the witness stand to testify against the accused concerning some polite and friendly word the accused had spoken to these secretaries, or that these secretaries had heard spoken to another in the courthouse. Thus, it bears repeating, when one is in doubt, wavering between silence and speaking, one ought to keep one's peace. How much more so when he knows he's in real accusatory danger? Consider the following reasons for keeping silent. First, talking to a policeman or other government agent will never help you and can only hurt you. Indeed, even if you are never prosecuted, no government employee will ever use anything you say to help you. Never forget, prosecutors, policemen, and bureau agents are well-trained professional accusers that live, move, and find their identity in a culture out to catch the unwary and lay blame. Consequently, their world is awash in trickery and deceit. In short, they are driven fault finders, and, as such, will only accuse, never excuse. Moreover, the laws of evidence will keep from the jury any statement you gave to a policeman, government agent, or prosecutor that you hope to offer in evidence to help yourself, but on the other hand, will allow the prosecutor to use such statements against you. See, for example, Fed R. Evid, 801 D2A. Facts are truth, but when facts are used to prove a matter in question, at least enough facts to bar false conclusions are necessary. As also, any lies the prosecutor may attempt to add to a set of facts must be barred. Consider how our common law's traditional witnesses' oath teaches how true words can be used to lie. I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. It first tells us that in order for a testimony to be reliable, that is, calculated to lead the jury to the truth of the matter in question, it must be whole. Then the oath further tells us that once a testimony is whole, it will stay whole only if no falsehood is added. Simply put, adding untrue words to true words concerning a certain matter render the true words unreliable. In short, to be reliable, a testimony must have enough facts to paint a complete picture with no false brush of paint added. So we conclude that certain facts standing alone may not be the whole truth, and as such, can lead a jury to a false conclusion. Further, enough facts to paint a complete picture, but tainted with lies, can also lead the jury to a false conclusion. For example, consider the prosecutor in a child kidnapping case who asks his chief witness, "Describe what you saw." The witness then testifies with true facts. "I saw the defendant running out the back door of the child's home in the dark hours of the morning, carrying the screaming child." However, if the witness fails to add that as he saw the defendant run out of the house carrying the child, he also saw that the house was afire, that the roof was about to cave, he has not told the whole truth. But let's say he did testify to the whole truth, saying that as the defendant ran out of the house carrying the house was afire, and the roof was about to cave, but then adds the following untruth. "The day before the defendant carried the child out of the house, he told me, the witness, that he intended to burn the house and steal the child, never to return him to his mother because he, the defendant, was the child's true father." To sum up, in order for any set of facts to be reliable, they must present the whole truth, every fact necessary to paint a complete picture, and nothing but the truth, no falsehood added. One sentence or even one phrase lifted out of context can convict a man and send him to prison. During the criminal trial of your commenter, the federal prosecutors took, without a warrant, a video recording of an hour-long education lecture he had delivered 9 years before. They carefully cut parts out of it, rendering it less than the whole truth. The prosecutors then had it edited to join phrases and sentences that were never spoken together, thereby adding falsities, and then showed this false montage to the jury during trial. Please know, anything you say can and will be twisted against you, as says Kipling, by knaves to make a trap for fools. Because the framers knew you are justified in counting on prosecutors using your words against you, They included the Fifth Amendment guarantee of your right to remain silent. By the way, never hang your hat on a mere hope of a policeman or government agent telling you that something you say may be used against you. Count on it. It will be. But even if it is not, you will have lost nothing by not saying it. Be slow to speak. Second, admitting to any fact in hopes of showing your innocence will never persuade a policeman or government agent of your innocence. If you tell a fact pointing to your guilt, you seal your fate. But even if you tell a fact pointing to your innocence, it will never change a policeman's mind one way or the other. In fact, by pointing to your innocence, you only open yourself to danger by providing fodder for false accusation, and to the double negative shell game of words, the he claimed, he never did, not do it trick. Bottom line, are you willing to trust a man whose self-worth as a law enforcement officer and reputation among his friends and colleagues depends upon his willing ability to ferret out crime without respect of persons, and once deciding to level his crosshairs, never backing off till he, as boasted Sergeant Preston, gets his man? Never be fooled. The policeman does not trust you. That is why he questions you. He wants you to talk because he knows that if he gives you leeway, you'll take enough rope, talk enough, to allow your own hanging. This makes the prosecutor's job easier, earning the policeman the prosecutor's praise and that good feeling of comradeship with him. He assumes you are human enough to say whatever cast a good light on yourself. If you believe he is also human enough to do the same, you will not talk. Wisdom again beckons. To forfeit your right to keep silent is to shed your God-given armor against unbridled packs of accusers. Neither should you count on your kindness or your cooperation to get a just response. Once targeted, no matter how much you protest, those having put you in their sights will either rage or laugh. But in no case can you be sure they will leave you alone. Thus, wisdom says be slow to talk, slowly ponder whether you should, and study how to be quiet. No one is under any duty to give to any inquisitor information to which law does not entitle him. Remember, talking to one kept by government is different from talking to one who is not. To be sure, policemen and other government agents, such as prosecutors, are under no enforceable duty to seek your welfare. In short, you can never justifiably rely on law enforcement to be loyal to fair play, and the maxim, he who seeks fairness must be fair. Unlike contract law and property law, criminal law follows no teachings of equity to soften its harshness toward you. But rather, in the spirit of their mother, the Roman Code, the modern criminal law codes of both law and regulation apply equity, never in your favor, but only in favor of the faceless state. To worsen the matter, judges in America are more and more drawn from the ranks of professional prosecutors, knowing little to nothing of private law. But worse, having shared the prosecutor's position, such a judge is sympathetic to the needs of the prosecutor, not the plight of the accused. Accordingly, the enforcement arm of the criminal law industry, the police state, is all about stretched thin and forced application of law, all fashioned nowadays in derogation of the common law's fair play and due process, in favor of the powerful party, the powers that be. As was the conviction of our forebears, to which our Declaration of Independence and Constitution so well testify, government is a dangerous servant and a fearful master, never to be trusted, but always to be kept penned in and watched. Thus, do not talk. What's the hurry? If you want to talk, talk only to those who can help you. In short, save it for the jury. In bears repeating, law enforcement personnel of the now massive criminal law industry, indeed every cog of them from top to bottom and taken all around, are professional accusers, bent on finding fault, and are encouraged further to be diligent at it because so justifies their position, paycheck, and security. Your commenter was involved in a case where the prosecutor, in his spite to get his targeted man, had extorted sworn but false statements from two others, using threats of prosecution and exciting fears of never-ending harassment. If the accused had talked to the government agents and denied his guilt, the prosecutor, armed with his false witnesses, intended to charge his target with making a false statement, and then bring in the false witnesses to prove his accusation. Never give the prosecutor ammunition to reload and fire back at you. The criminal law industry, in self-righteousness, complains that the accused in criminal cases lie to police and on the witness stand. Two responses are in order. First, such a response is the pot calling the kettle black. Every criminal case in which your commenter has been involved included some government employee, prosecutor, policeman, paid-off snitch, lied to the court under their scholastic notion that the ends justify the means. But second, this booklet is not about encouraging lying, but about eliminating all possibility of lying by remaining silent. Third, even if you are innocent, any words you speak bring with them the chance that you will inadvertently speak a mistake of fact, risking charges that you have made a false statement to a law officer. Policemen and government agents take pride in their crafty cleverness to take advantage of another's trust of them, eliciting answers to their questions by feigning openness and humility. These are the devices of the Roman Inquisitor, dragged by the ears out of old world graves and given legs in the modern criminal law industry. Federal agents ambled into one of your commenter's client's makeshift office in an outbuilding on the back of his property and tossed a copy of one of his filed tax returns onto his desk with the words, "We're the IRS agents. Do you agree with everything on that return?" The agents gave no warning of their visit, made no request to enter his office, and offered no greeting. Further, the tone with which the agent asked his question was rude, but worse, the mere reek of the federal presence demanded he answer forthwith. Simply put, the atmosphere was charged with dangerous pressure to break the silence with words. The agents believed they had found something on the return they could use against him. Otherwise, they would never have taken time to find their way to his remote tucked back office. Thinking they had him trapped no matter which way he answered, they fashioned themselves clever in their own minds. If he answered no, he would be charged with signing a government information collecting form under penalties of perjury that he did not believe to be true and correct as to every material matter. If, on the other hand, he answered yes, he would be charged with lying to a federal officer. Do not think that he was relaxed enough to take time to think through all this. He was not, and he did not. Nevertheless, always willing and quick to breathe cool, friendly air into a hot, charged atmosphere, he replied in the manner of the farm boy with nothing to hide he had always been, albeit now a 57-year-old successful one. "I reckon." Using those two words, the feds snagged him with a grand jury indictment for lying to a federal officer. Is it any wonder that the Hyde Commission concluded that a federal prosecutor using a grand jury could indict a ham sandwich? The direct, focused pressure of such a calculated attack affords no time to think. You must have already thought it through and have determined that when a policeman or government agent, a professional accuser, wants an answer or otherwise wants you to open your mouth, you must presume deceit, that he is playing you false and that you will not play. Don't talk. Wisdom's single, simple rule beckons. Button your lip. Make this rule of your first instinct. Remember, dealing with government is the dealer's game, and the policeman or federal agent is the dealer, holding all cards but one. Your right to remain silent remains in your entire control and will trump any card the dealer may deal, even any false deal. Prosecutors are sly at ferreting out twistable words and wily at torturing even an unintended misstatement of an irrelevant fact, making it appear not only relevant, but also felonious. Worse yet, because the unsavvy juror tends to view the prosecutor as his lawyer, he also tends to trust him over your lawyer. Blame works doubt, because guilt, the gift that keeps on giving, plagues every member of Adam's race. The sensitive person, once accused, will often fully or partially admit to weakness, wrong desire, deemed a criminal motive, and wrongdoing, deemed a criminal act, even falsely. In short, mere accusation causes a one to doubt oneself. Herein lies the danger. Doubting oneself allows one, in true humility, to concede the possibility he has made a mistake. In one instance, your commenter watched his client's co-defendant, by then overwhelmed with years of the government's unrelenting attacks against his family, reputation, and business, and weary after 2 years of shouldering his own defense, broke down before the jury in tears, confessing his frailty. He quickly regained his composure, but the prosecutor, in summing up, argued hard to the jury that criminal types such as the defendant use false humility to get sympathy. In any case, guilt feelings, a disease common to all, just as often as not, befogs the brain, moving the otherwise sharpest of people to speak stupid words while trying to clear themselves and show their innocence. Attempts at self-justification often magnify one's weaknesses, resulting in unintentional overstatement out of impulse, understatement out of ignorance, or inadvertent misstatement from lips stammering from fear or even emotional defect. All these can further give prosecutors excuse for charges of obstructing justice, even against the innocent. Never forget, to be under criminal accusation can be compared to getting your name on the ballot in a political race. It somehow causes an instant drop of at least 30 IQ points. Just as the wise soldier is never nervous to prove himself at his foe's first attempts to draw him into battle, but instead waits to engage at the place and time of his choosing, so also, the one targeted for prosecution must never be anxious to show his defense until doing so will be most advantageous to him. Generally, this will be at the place and time allowing him his best shot at a decisive blow in his favor, which is often in the courtroom after the jury are impaneled. Remember, our common law tradition is adversarial. The final showdown is battle by trial. And just as trial by battle in the field, winning in battle by trial before the jury comes down to a single art of warfare. Patient, careful, waiting, followed by rapid, focused, and audacious attack brought to bear at the right place and moment. Thus, the warfare of battle by trial before the jury demands great caution through long patience, followed by the strike of a lightning punch, quick, full, and forceful. The lightning punch having no need to protect its flanks, but until that decisive moment, silence, when facing the criminal law machine, is golden. Words are the ammunition of battle by trial. Not only does a soldier's firing his weapon before engagement give away his position and wastes his ammunition, so also firing off one's mouth before trial reveals one's defense, forfeiting the element of surprise. Unless you are over a barrel, without a genuine shot at a winsome defense, save your ammo for the jury, those having real power to judge the contest. Anyone having signed a tax return, a bank loan application, or other piece of paper meant to provide information to employees of government or government-backed or funded institutions, such as hospitals, banks, and insurance companies, puts himself at risk of criminal prosecution for signing a false document, for example, not true and correct as to every material matter. For example, federal prosecutors, upon targeting someone for investigation, sometimes in retaliation for exercise of a constitutionally protected right or for political revenge, comb the targeted person's tax returns and bank loan applications, going back many years for any hint of a misstatement, or even a true statement they can argue was made to mislead the grand jury, which is a crime. Accordingly, all it takes is a few bureaucratic-minded government employees to think that a person may threaten their power. Of such subjects, prosecutors will then target for criminal prosecution those it believes can or do indeed threaten the power of those in power, the powers that be. Make no mistake, government dependents cultivate an insider culture that sees their chosen targets as enemies of the state, that is, of the status quo, the way things are. Much as the British Army and Navy became the strong arm for the benefactors of East India Company and its offshoot monopolies, American police forces are now a necessary cog in the criminal law industry machine, the fast-encroaching civil law state's enforcement arm, whose undergirding policy is that the status quo of power be kept at all costs. The enlivening freedoms of the common law tradition, such as the right to remain silent, are intolerable to the shameful state of government. In order to remove freedom's threat to civil law power, those enjoining dependence upon the present state of government unleash their gathered power at their target without bridle, much as a hunter unleashes his hounds to worry down his prey for capture or kill. Further, by declaring a person a target, he becomes the object of ridicule, the victim of slander, and the butt of sport. Government employees do respect their targets. To expect otherwise is naive. Silence, therefore, not belligerence, is your best response. Besides, talking to a dependent agent of the faceless state is as useless as trying to talk to the groping arm of an octopus. The combinations forming the powers that be compromise a creature with far-reaching, groping tentacles and wilier than any other beast. Talking to such a creature is as dangerous as talking to a grizzly sow bereaved of her cubs, because such a beast can not deal in doubt or pity, will not swerve for fact or jest. Instead, the time has come to be as wise as a serpent and appear as harmless as a dove. Keep 'em guessing. Do not talk. Talking can only reveal the strengths and weaknesses of your defense before the final showdown in trial by battle. Granting your adversaries information that allows them to counter your strengths and turn your weaknesses against you. But worse still, by talking, you can give them the rope with which they hope to hang you. If you are never targeted, you have lost nothing by your silence. To sum up, never be deceived. Once a man is targeted for prosecution, he is unwise to count on his innocence being of any concern to those swilling at the state's trough. Such creatures are blind to anything that would swerve them from destroying their master's target. Why? Because keeping intent on executing their master's will allows them to keep their snout in the master's swill. Like the jailer, who, void of independent discernment, warehouses the innocent as well as the guilty, the government's kept men are willing to prosecute the innocent as well as the guilty. Even if there are exceptions, you have no way of knowing who those exceptions are. Only the foolhardy will assume otherwise. Fourth, even if you are innocent and tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, even the truth will always give prosecutors something to use against you. Again, given the blind aggression of the law enforcement industry's dependence nowadays, since whatever you say can be used against you, wisdom demands that you act in belief that it will be. Please know also, as blackjack is the dealer's game, criminal prosecution is the government's game. This means the courthouse crowd holds the cards, the power to withhold evidence, to lie to you and to the court without fear of prosecution. Who will prosecute the prosecutors? To make unlawful searches and seizures without fear of consequence, unlimited resources and tax dollars, prestige, force and threat of force, and immunity from liability, to name a few. But unlike blackjack, which is a game to both dealer and player, criminal prosecution, though never a game to the prosecuted, too often is to the prosecutor. Proof that criminal prosecution is sometimes a game to the prosecutor is found in the Supreme Court's opinions forbidding criminal prosecution for sport. A prosecutor's hard blows, says the Supreme Court, are fair, but foul ones never are. Fifth, never will prosecutors wittingly use to your benefit any statements you give a policeman or government agent. Truth is stranger than fiction. The prosecutor's career depends on body count. Hence, he is driven to win and immune from suit. Consequences for dishonesty are no threat. Consequently, temptation to cheat is powerful. It stands to reason that prosecutors, during the course of their prosecution, will, in order to ensure conviction, commit the very kinds of crimes of which they accuse the defendant. The government will even use statements showing your innocence against you. The tricks it uses to do so are myriad. Moreover, though lawless, the government's men fear no consequence for such deceit, while knowing full well that their mere accusations of you being deceitful enables your conviction. If the government neglects to include some exonerating evidence, the burden is on the accused to prove that neglect. Even then, prosecutors fear no consequence, because even if their omission is shown to be intentional, the greatest damage done to the prosecution is to lose the case. The prosecutor need fear no personal consequences. In one case, your commenter recorded a telephone conversation with his client's former counsel. These recorded comments gave the client a complete defense. 1. That the client had given his former lawyer every fact needed for that lawyer to give sound advice. 2. That he did indeed give the client advice. And 3. That the client followed that advice. Your commenter then gave that recording, along with a transcript of it, to the federal prosecutor. But instead of thanking me, the prosecutor turned more vicious, took the recording and transcript, and with help extorted from the client's former counsel, for example, threatened him with criminal indictment if he did not do as told, altered the transcript to mislead the grand jury, and then had your commenter indicted. The prosecutor succeeded at trial. The jury was manipulated, and the client was convicted. In further retaliation against your commenter for trying to clear his client, the prosecutor sought your commenter's indictment. Never forget, the criminal law industry deems defense lawyers to be the accuser's chief weapon and co-conspirator. Therefore, it does all it can through harassment, under the guise of its powers of investigation, accusation, indictment, conviction, and false imprisonment, to discourage the defense lawyer from defending his client with the heart his oath and code of ethics demand. Sixth, even if you are innocent and tell the policeman or government agent only truth establishing your innocence, prosecutors may forget the questions asked, or lie about the question asked, and substitute a question that makes your truthful answer appear to be a lie or misleading. Either of the foregoing possibilities enables a felony indictment for obstructing justice, putting you in jeopardy of criminal conviction. Law enforcement officers and prosecutors are human, but more often than not, even more so than others. Indeed, as are other men, they are ambitious and driven, sometimes for the right reasons and at other times not. Temptation to ignore the law to get a conviction sometimes wins. Gross overbalances of power and resources are on law enforcement's side, and the temptation to use these with unfair vigor and even vengeance comes to prevail. Seventh, even if you tell a policeman only truth establishing your innocence, that truth, coupled with weak or otherwise unreliable evidence, can support conviction of a crime. Indeed, some small bit of information, harmless in itself, can provide a clue enabling discovery of more circumstantial evidence or providing a link in a chain of evidence that allows a labored length of reasoning, which jurors, under delusion of prosecutorial deceit and courtroom theatrics, have proven able and willing to swallow hook, line, and sinker. To sum up, the Fifth Amendment is the blessing of Providence, securing to you the gift of the right to keep silent. Keeping silent, however, is easier said than done. Few muster the fortitude to resist the temptation to talk. When in deep water, say American sailors, keep your mouth shut lest you drown. Anytime a policeman or government agent baits you to answer a few questions, he hopes to lure you into deep water where a prosecutor can later weigh you down with your own words and drown you. Count on it. Never entertain thoughts otherwise. Remember, government law enforcement agents, employees, and witnesses are human and can, indeed do, lie to you with impunity, without fear of consequence, and have made an art of doing so. Promises of safety and assurances that you are not a target of prosecution are intended only to get you to relax, let down your guard, and talk. If you do talk, you, at the least, have given prosecutors material to work with, to bend and twist against you, or to use to persuade the jury you are elusive. But without your contribution of words, prosecutors will likely have no case or only a weak one. Those who spend time in prison soon learn from fellow inmates that most convictions are self-inflicted. By providing acts or words or both, the accused convicts himself. Prosecutors need not always be good trial lawyers, but need only rely on the prestige of the position. They are never forced into the self-discipline necessary to beat the odds, as are some defense lawyers. To keep silent in the face of force, intimidation, screaming, and threats of abuse takes knowledge, conviction, wisdom, courage, and confidence. Indeed, you must first know that the Fifth Amendment has secured to you the common law right to keep silent. This knowledge, then, will bring conviction and a desire to enjoy that right. Desire to keep silent will bring trial and error, resulting in practical wisdom through exercise of the right. Finally, exercise of the right will bring encouragement to assert the right, bringing more quiet confidence of having kept silent. Eighth, if you are not the target of a criminal investigation, talking will only increase excuses for prosecutors to make you a target. If you are already targeted, talking will only add to what government can twist against you. In all cases, whether one is in the prosecutor's crosshairs or just being trailed and sniffed at, experience and good sense agree. It is foolhardy to count on anything you say to persuade policemen or prosecutors of your innocence. Wisdom again beckons, be quick to hear and slow to speak, which, being interpreted, means before doing anything else, cock open your ears and clamp shut your mouth. Some protest, saying that if they choose to stand on their right to remain silent, it will make the policemen, agents, and prosecutors angry, riling them to fiercer aggression. However, it has been your commenter's experience that if you are neither a suspect, one believed guilty but not yet targeted for lack of evidence, nor a target, one held in the prosecutor's crosshairs, keeping silent will not place you in the prosecutor's crosshairs. It is said that during the rough-and-tumble revolutionary days of Pancho Villa, the Mexican federales captured a couple of Pancho's men, holding a quick drumhead court against them. The captives were convicted within minutes, sentenced to death by firing squad, and, for that purpose, were each tied to a separate post, side by side. However, just before giving the orders for execution, the commandant, as was the custom, drew near the captives and offered of them a final cigarette. In acceptance, the first prisoner shook his head, yes, at which the commandant hung a cigarette between the prisoner's lips and lit it for him. The commandant then turned to the second prisoner with the same offer, holding out a cigarette toward him. But the second prisoner, seeing that the commandant's having moved close offered an easy target, spit in his face. The first prisoner turned to his belligerent comrade with the rebuke, "Hey, man! What you trying to do? Make him mad?" Simply put, if you are in the crosshairs, you will be there until the prosecution team decides, absent anything you say or do, otherwise. They have declared war. Equity is out the window. Thus, making them mad by staying silent can only help, but never hurt. Besides, when the opposition gets mad, they make more mistakes. But further, he who values his life, liberty, and property sells it dearly. The only difference between being bound before a firing squad and being fixed in a prosecutor's crosshairs is the degree of severity of the outcome. Loss of life hangs over the one targeted before the firing squad. Loss of liberty and maybe life, hangs over the one held in the prosecutor's crosshairs. In sum, if you are in the prosecutor's rifle scope, nothing you say to any policeman or government agent will change the prosecutor's resolve to keep the crosshairs on you. If you are not in the crosshairs, talking can only give excuse to put you there. The Reconstructionist Radio Podcast Network brings to you a complete lineup of podcasts where you will hear practical and tactical theology. Our desire is not simply that you consume our shows, but that you also live out your faith in every area of life. We can talk all day long about these things, but if we fail to put them into practice, then we fail as ambassadors of Jesus Christ, our King. Subscribe now to your favorite Reconstructionist Radio Podcast Network shows, or you can subscribe to the Reconstructionist Radio Master Feed, where all of the content we produce, including the audiobooks and audio articles, will pop up as soon as they are available. And don't forget to visit ReconstructionistRadio.com to volunteer as a narrator or to partner with this ministry financially. May the Holy Spirit stir you into action for Christ and His kingdom.